Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Storytelling is a collaborative art, a pas de deux, I like to call it, which is a French term, makes me sound fancy. Listen, I don't even know if I pronounced that correctly, but that means a dance for two. And I always say this because no matter what situation or in what capacity you are using storytelling, it is a dance for two. It is a collaborative art. When I say that, I mean if I'm telling a story on stage, the audience is just as important as me on stage, the storyteller, or the story listeners are just as important as the storyteller. Think about a movie, right? Or a comedy show. The audience has to be a part of it, ebbing and flowing back and forth. Now, when you're creating social media content and you're using storytelling on YouTube or on TikTok or anywhere where you're trying to connect with your audience, what they respond to, what engages their emotions and their minds so that they listen to what you have to say, is that important? Yeah, it's imperative, right? You have to have that, and you have to adjust and adapt your storytelling if it's not syncing up in a proper dance for two. Now, where this also exists is if you're using storytelling to help your clients. In fact, any way you serve your clients is a journey, is a story, so you could look at it like that. But for me and people like me, when I am actually helping businesses and brands create stories, it is still a collaborative art. And that is exactly what I talked to about with my guest on today's show. What's up, storytellers? Welcome back to the Storytelling Lab. This is episode 134, and today my guest is Elena Rue. Elena Rue, who happens to live very close to me in the Triangle area of North Carolina. That's Raleigh, Durham, and Chapel Hill for you non-local folks. And she lives in Hillsboro, which is very close, 15, 20 minutes away from me here in Durham. And here's the thing. I think I knew everyone around here, at least in my field, and in fact, I do not. But that's what's exciting, is even here in my medium-sized city, there are still expert storytellers living among us that I didn't even know about. And that's what's so exciting. There's a very rich culture in storytelling here in Durham. I feel very very proud of that, and also very grateful to be in that community. Now, Elena is a documentary filmmaker and a storytelling expert, and with her co-founder, Catherine Orr, they created StoryMind Media. Now, what StoryMind focuses on, very simply, although it's not a simple task, is change, is social change, systemic change even. These are big tasks that they are trying to achieve. And anytime you are working with storytelling, it is about transformation. Even if it's a TikTok video that I make, I am trying to leave that audience member, that viewer, in a different position than when they arrived. That's what we should all seek to do as storytellers. You need to transform your audience, even if just in a minute, you know, marginal way. Now, when you're trying to shift systemic change in society, how many S's can I put in that sentence? That's significant, right? And it takes a significant amount of storytelling. It's not even really about that. It's about It's about the strategic approach of storytelling. And Elena and Catherine at StoryMind Media do this very well. And we talk about this on the show. Literally, they collaborate with their clients throughout the whole process. And I'll say that often this in the industry, this might be advised against. You're the guide, right? You tell them what they need to do and they listen. But their philosophy is that the more they can understand the company and what makes them or the organization, if it's a nonprofit, and what their values are and who their clients and communities and customers are, the more they can understand what they stand for, what they're trying to achieve, what they're made up of, or who they're made up of, then the better StoryMind Media can do their job. So they really lean into this collaborative art. Now, and that's easier said than done because these clients are not professional storytellers, right? So this episode really focuses on that whole process. And if you're an organization or a brand that's thought about video production, even if you're not trying to really change society in the way we view something, you will benefit so much from hearing this episode and how and the collaborative approach that Elena and StoryMind Media take. It's so valuable to have this peek into the process for you to understand how you can replicate that process for yourself. Now, this is for your own content, remember, or if you're working with a client. So here is my conversation with Elena Rue, and I hope that you love it.
Welcome to the Storytelling Lab, where we break down how to get to the heart of your story and the hearts of your audience to leave the greatest impact possible. And now, here's your host, award-winning filmmaker and writer, Rain Bennett.
What's up, my beautiful people? Welcome to another episode of the Storytelling Lab, where we help you break down the art and science of storytelling. My name is Rain Bennett. I am your host, and my job is to help you deepen your connections, increase your sales, and serve your audiences better. Every Tuesday morning, I send out a quick storytelling tip to my newsletter subscribers. I show you techniques I've learned along my journey and used in my own stories, as well as those of my clients. But most importantly, I leave you with tangible takeaways that you can apply to your brand storytelling immediately. Oh, well, actually, more importantly than that, it's free. If this would help you, sign up for the newsletter at rainbennett.com/weeklystorytellingtips. Elena, welcome to the show. Welcome to the Storytelling Lab. How's your day going?
It's good. Thanks so much for having me.
Yeah, I'm excited to have this chat. You know, it's part of my job to know storytellers all around the world, all around the country, and sometimes right even in my backyard. So I'm first of all, you're in Hillsboro, so very close to Durham. Mm-hmm. Went to UNC, so we're kind of in each other's backyard. And I was really shocked to, like, we know of, like, so many of the same people, how we had never met before, or at least, like, bumped elbows at the same, you know, at Full Frame Film Festival or something, mm-hmm. you know, over the years. But, you know, I think it says a lot to our community here of filmmakers. So it's nice to officially meet you. And now we have this connection and we know we're just a stone's throw away.
Exactly.
I'm interested in, you know, I know your background. Did you go to the J school at UNC?
I did, for grad school.
For grad school. Mm-hmm. What'd you study in undergrad?
I did anthropology and photography.
Okay, got you. Yeah. Okay, mm-hmm. So I can see a little bit of connection there.
Yeah, I mean, it was a liberal arts school, so there weren't a lot of options. And so I was doing still photography at the time, but I was also interested in people's lives and cultures and stories. And so I was drawn to anthropology, and then that was, like, the closest thing I could find.
Yeah, no, I didn't know that part, but now I see how those two roads could connect. Mm-hmm. It's not unique that I talk to someone on the show or otherwise about storytelling that come from a journalistic background, right? Mm-hmm. It makes sense. What I'm interested in asking you first is, what is different about your approach from maybe a typical journalist in terms of storytelling? This could be like your perspective that was shaped back then or how you approach things now, but is, you know, have you veered off the path of what you've learned? Do you have a different approach?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think there are a lot of things. So first of all, we don't like to just kind of drop in and leave. We like to in a story, we like to really spend a lot of time figuring out it, that I guess more in like a documentary style where we, you know, embed ourselves in the issue and really think about it a lot. We don't really believe in objectivity. You know, I think that we feel like people who are close to a story know a lot about it, and they should be part of the storytelling process. So in journalism school, we were taught, well, never show anyone, you know, something that you've created until it's published, and you know, don't reveal your process. But one thing that we feel really strongly about is bringing the people that are in the story into the storytelling process. They are the guide for us, and that's something that's very different from what we learned in journalism.
Oh yes, I love this already because, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I suppose that's because from the, you know, journalism or journalistic approach, that's keeping the journalist as the what's the, I mean, the one in control, or like the what is the word I'm looking for? The authority, right? On that story, right? So that makes sense. But the way you're describing it, which I love, is it's more of a collaborative, like dance together. And I love how you said that they are the guide. I completely agree. Instead of dropping in and like, what'd you think of this? And then bouncing out of their lives and making your own opinion, perspective, story on it, you're working with them. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, I think for in a lot of you know, and I don't want to, you know, disparage journalism.
Of course
This
not.
is just our approach, but I think a lot of times we were taught to not have them be involved because they're too close to the subject, and their closeness or maybe their emotional attachment will cloud their judgment or things like that. But we feel like, you know, how can you not do a story where you involve them in, because they are the experts in their own stories.
True. This makes me think of another question. For you as the storyteller, do you feel like, I think that's a fair, that what you just said, like they're too close to the story. I think it certainly can cloud judgment, or, you know, it can be a problem, but I don't think that means we eliminate it, right? So I'm on the same page. Do you find, or do you believe that you as the storyteller could kind of pick up on those things where it's like, well, that may or may not be truth, or it's a piece of the story, and then you get another perspective. Like, I'm not doing a good job of formulating this question, but I think that if you know what you're doing, my thought is, or my assumption is, that you would be able to tell if that perspective is clouded. That makes sense. Are you following me? Okay, cool.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's all kind of a conversation, and sort of everybody brings their own expertise. So, you know, we bring expertise as storytellers. They bring expertise as community members, or you know, people who are involved in a certain topic, or if it's their personal story, and sort of working together to figure out, you know, what's the best way to shape this for the audience. And I think both perspectives are valuable, and just sort of w collaborating and being transparent, you know, kind of helps get you there.
Absolutely. That's key. I kind of wanted to, you know, since you've been talking about not just touch and go into someone's story, but really, like, I feel like you guys at Story Mind kind of dive a little bit deeper into them, and you've told me now that you've worked with them in this kind of collaborative process. Can we just do like an overview of what the process is? And what I'm really interested in first is kind of, is really like the first step, when you're, you know, you've met a potential client, you're sitting down, or you decided you wanted to work together. Like, how do you, I mean, mine for, you know, that story within their overall story. Like, what is the first video, like, strategy meeting look like when you're like blank, you know, clean sheet, blank slate? Where do you go from there?
Yeah, so we have an initial meeting with every client, even if we've worked with clients lots before. They know our process, and we're very, you know, we adapt if we need to based on the story, but we like to have certain touch points throughout. And so the first story that we have is, we call it a story design session, and it's usually like 2 hours. And what we do is, I like to think, is like, we're just like throwing everything at the wall and seeing what sticks. Yeah. So we often have them say like, what are all the possible stories that we could tell? You know, we try to get, we also have like a core team of people that we work with, you know, so we have, you know, either, you know, people on the, you know, with the organization, and then also when possible people from the community that they're working with, or part of the, or sometimes like someone who's part of the target audience to get their perspective throughout. And so we get all those people together and say, okay, what are all the possible things? And we write them down, and then we make them narrow them down. So I like to think of it as like a funnel. So we start with like all this stuff here, and then we ask more questions and more questions and more questions and sort of narrow it down. And we don't throw away the other things that came up on that list, because then we say, okay, well, if you want to do a video in 6 months, like maybe we could do this one. And, you know, maybe next year you could do one about this. And so we keep that list, but we sort of ask them to narrow it down, because as you know, doing this work, that like often everyone wants to put everything that they do, particularly if it's an organization, all their programs and all the things that they do in the video. And, you know, as you know, that like that doesn't work. And so that process, it's a narrowing down of what we want to focus on, but it's also a teaching moment for them to realize, oh, you can't put all that in there. And, you know, this is what's important right now for us to focus on.
The teaching moment is such a great point. Like, I had a mentor years ago that checked me a little bit, because I think I just maybe made an assumption about what they would know or what they wouldn't know. And he said it very plainly, like, well, you have to educate me on the process. I don't know what you do or what's going on behind the scenes. And I was like, oh, yeah, obviously. Yep. So from that moment on, it was like, yeah, educating your clients is a big part of it. So let's stay there for a minute, because I think this is really important for people who might be the client listening to this, and also people who might be the storyteller or the video company. Let's start with you've already touched on some with like too many stories in one. Mm-hmm. What are some of the biggest misconceptions that people, client in this situation, I think, misconceptions they have about video storytelling?
I know a lot of the listeners to the show are public speakers, or they want to become public speakers. But the problem that many experienced and aspiring professional speakers face is that they simply don't have the time to grow their business the way they would like. And look, I get it. I've been there. Maybe you're there right now. That's why I started using the team at Virtual Campfires to provide me with leads to events and conferences that are a good fit for my message. So they send me all the relevant details I need to immediately reach out and start a conversation with those decision makers. And they've worked with hundreds of speakers to provide tens of thousands of event leads, and it's easy to see why. Outsourcing this time-consuming step has saved me hours and hours of scanning Google, and lets me go faster towards my goal of more events, more audiences, and more impact. All you need to do is email leads@virtualcampfires.com to see how their lead subscription business can help you the same way it's helped me. Again, that's leads@virtualcampfires.com. Let them help you tell more great stories and get paid for it.
What are some of the biggest misconceptions that people, client in this situation, I think, misconceptions they have about video storytelling?
I mean, this is sort of a basic thing, but I think people forget that you really need to have your audience in mind when you're creating a story, because sometimes, you know, you need to think about, okay, who do you most want to watch this?
Yes.
And think about them. But then there are also like, but then who's the second group of people who are like, you know, the people who, you know, it would, they're not your main audience, but you also, they're also going to get something from it. And, and I think not keeping that in mind, you know, if like, for instance, right now we're doing a lot of stories for doctors with the New England Journal of Medicine. And with that in mind, we can't really have a lot of our videos be super duper basic, because they're going to tune out. You know, they have a level of understanding already. So one of the things we ask is like, okay, what's the level of understanding that your audience has, or like where, why are they coming to this? What perspective do they have? And so that really helps us figure out, you know, the tone and the approach and like what's, you know, what that's also like a narrowing down of like, okay, this isn't going to be basic. This isn't going to be super complicated. Maybe this isn't going to be in the middle. And that sort of gives us a framework for another sort of layer of understanding of the direction to go for the video.
You kind of inadvertently or indirectly brought up another thing I'd like to touch on. You know, you're working a lot with doctors now, mm-hmm. and I've had experience with, you know, in healthcare industry or the medical industry as well as, and I think this is, you know, lawyers might be the same way, scientists might be the same way. Like, they're these typical industries where people are cards to the chest, tight lip, you know, mm-hmm. very jargony, etc. Yes. Yeah, you're rolling your eyes, so you get it. So I'm really interested in, like, when you have a client like that, and listen, they also have good reasons, especially doctors, of why to, like, not just be like a complete open book. Mm-hmm. I'm not naive to that, but in the storytelling approach, that's not necessarily the best way to move forward without mm-hmm. any kind of depth. How do you handle that? Like, how do you get them to open up? How do you guide someone like that who's used to being very, I don't know if stoic is the right word, but just, you know, very straightforward, just the facts, if you will.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we have a couple strategies. It kind of depends on the person. You know, some people, you know, often come in and say, well, I'm media trained. And we think, oh no. And they think that's the positive. And we don't necessarily think that in our case, because that means they're delivering sound bites, right? Yeah. So we almost never like give questions ahead of time.
Yeah.
Because then, you know, people practice them or they have like, okay, this is the sound bite that I'm going to use. And so I think sort of like allowing them to answer in the jargony way, because maybe there's, you know, something that's useful there too, but also asking things in a different way or asking like feeling questions. Like if they tell you about something, it's like, okay, well, how did that feel for you? And like, you know,
that's a good one.
And just sort of like breaking the mold a little bit and asking things in an unexpected way kind of forces them to break off of script and sort of interact, you know, in a more casual way.
Mm-hmm. That's a really good one. How did that make you feel? It forces them to address their emotions.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right.
I'm not sure if I want. Yeah, I'm going to go here now. Because we're still talking about the process. I just kind of deviated with the doctors a little bit. But let's talk about money. Money often comes up, you know, in my experience as a hurdle, an obstacle, things to work through. There's also misconceptions there. Some people are just like, I can't afford video production. Mm-hmm. How do you approach that if you face this? And you may not, be awesome if you didn't. When someone's like, that's always like a point of resistance where it's like, we don't have, the money to do that. Do you all have experience with like helping them raise the money to do it or creative approaches to it? Or how do you get them to justify it or understand it's a return on investment? Any of that, any of those approaches that kind of get over that issue of like, hey, this sounds great. I love what you're thinking, but we can't do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I would say the main thing that we've done is try to adjust our scope, but without sacrificing the integrity of the story. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we'll have a story, you know, the story design session, and in that session, we'll really find out, you know, what is the most important thing that we need to communicate, like whose story needs to be told, the real sort of core part of what they want to do. And then there's the like deluxe premium way to do that, and there's the like middle of the road, and then there's the budget way to do it, but if you still have that core story in mind, we're gonna try to get there no matter what way we do it. But it could be like, oh, we don't have the money to hire like a big crew and, you know, film for 3 days. Let's maybe partner with a photographer and have them take pictures, and then we do audio, and we do like a you know, really compelling audio audio story, like audio visual story or audio photo story.
Yeah.
Or you don't have the time to interview all these people. Okay, we're going to have it from one perspective. And we sort of adjust the scope to tell it in that way. So that's the way that we usually try to do that, is we try to meet the client where they are and still make it work regardless of the budget.
I think that's another good point of, or a point of education of, for the clients is what you just said, is understanding that there are different approaches, mm-hmm. you know, that can still, as long as you, like you said, maintain the integrity of the story. Cause I think often people, you know, just think it's that, or especially if you send a quote and it's like, here's what we were thinking. They're like, oh, we can't do it. Right. Mm-hmm. And it's like, well, there are several different creative ways, to achieve that. Right. Mm-hmm. But if this is an idea that we think will work, mm-hmm. for our audience that we've identified and achieved the objective that the video has, you know, we can look creatively and collaboratively at mm-hmm. how to achieve that with a budgetary restriction, right? Mm-hmm. Versus like, oh, that sounds perfect and it'll probably do just what we needed to do, but we don't have the money.
Yeah. Yeah. One tip for storytellers out there that we learned actually from a dear friend of ours who is like a business coach, executive mm-hmm. coach. And we almost never send a number by itself. Well, we never send a number by itself. And we almost never send a proposal without walking them through how it works. Because in that conversation, we can address those things live so that like they don't just see a number and make up their mind. It's sort of right. like, and let's talk through this and let's see, okay, this is out of scope. Like, well, what are some other options? And that, I feel like that's a much more, realistic way of going through it, and help, like another teaching moment, sort of helps them understand what part of the process costs more money and where could we, you know, adapt.
Yeah, it's a tricky one, especially for people earlier in their career, because you don't want to get caught in that thing where you're, you know, the client's like, how much does it cost? And you're mm-hmm. like, well, what's your budget?
Yeah.
Like, so I think having that, you know, it's still being collaborative, right? You're walking mm-hmm. them through this as well. So it's everything that we've talked about so far, like you're hand in hand, like side by side with them, guiding them. Mm-hmm. And then you said in terms of the story, they guide you. And so mm-hmm. this really is this dance, this back and forth. I'm loving, I'm like seeing it visually. So I think that's really important mm-hmm. when you're trying to, hey, sometimes, I mean, stories are emotional, right? You're digging deep into people's mm-hmm. Hearts sometimes. So that's mm-hmm. really important to make them feel like it's a partnership,
yeah,
and not like the journalistic approach, which again, no shade to mm-hmm. journalists, but yeah, I think that's really important. Mm-hmm. I had mentioned something in my last question about the objective of the video, right? We talked mm-hmm. about identifying like, who are you speaking to? Who do you want to watch this? Even the secondary audience, who might that be? Mm-hmm. What are the typical goals or objectives of your videos? Like, is it social media based? Is it, you know, long form documentaries? Is it, you know, how, and I'm sure it's, you know, there's a variety, but what mm-hmm. are the typical types of videos that you create for clients?
Yeah. So we tend to do stories that are like kind of more deep dives, I would say. Mm-hmm. So sometimes we'll work with clients who have a team of like a video team in-house, but then mm-hmm. they want to do a big project, like a 10th anniversary project, or they want to do something big yeah. where you dig in, or you know, a particular like issue or topic video. And we kind of come in and we have long timelines. We'll spend at least 6 months, if not more, working on particular projects, just because we have this set process, and we're also dealing with real people. And, you know, we can't just say, okay, we're going to come film with you tomorrow. It's like, maybe they can't film for, you know, a couple of weeks or whatever. So we have, you know, lengthy timelines. So it allows us to really dive in deep. We spend a lot of time, you know, before we ever even pick up a camera or talk to people, just like really researching things. And so I would say they're deeper dive projects. A lot of them end up, you know, online, or they're shown at galas and things like that. So we mostly do sort of, I would say like 2 to 15 minute videos. And I also should say, like, will maybe have, we do, tends to be like video packages. So there's maybe like a core video, but then there are like, you know, several versions of them, or there's like a 1 minute version, but then there's like the 5 minute, like deeper version. So we, depending on, you know, how they want to use it via social media, like it could be that there's a lot of social quick stuff, but it's based, it's taken from like a meatier, chunkier video.
And are you all, this is just kind of a film, from a filmmaker perspective question, are you all shooting and editing everything, or do you use another team, or how hands-on are you there?
Good question. Yeah. So we, we've been doing this work for 11 years. And I want to say for the first like seven, we were doing everything ourselves. And then we kind of knew we'd get to the point where it was just too much to juggle it all. And so I would say like just before the pandemic hit, we started, you know, hiring particularly DPs. And because of the pandemic, we now have started usually hiring DPs in the location where we're filming, as opposed to flying, you know, with, you know, going with, so that was like a strategy that really got us through the pandemic, is like, okay, who's someone local who doesn't have to get on a plane to film this, or they can film outside and that kind of stuff. But so yeah, so right now it's myself and Catherine, and we have a assistant editor and producer that we work with in-house. And then we work with cinematographers and PAs and crew members, you know, in a variety of different places.
You know, this also brings up another question, like for this type of job or company, the pandemic probably, you know, had a hit unless you made some pivots. Like, how did you all navigate that? Did you have to make any major changes to your business model or your approach?
Not really to our business model, but the filming definitely changed. So for the first several months, we did like Zoom interviews instead of in-person interviews. But then for B-roll, we would often hire someone at the very beginning to like film outside from a long way away with a long lens kind of. And like, I remember we were doing a story. I was supposed to go and film in person in like March 2020. And and so that one, we paused it for a couple of months, but then we decided to move forward. And it was for the National Audubon Society. So it was helpful in that it was outdoor based anyway. Yeah. So we did our interviews via Zoom. But then, you know, all the B-roll happened outdoors from a distance. And then, but it did open up this door for us that like, we, if we don't want to go in person, we'll hire a crew, and then I'll Zoom myself or my partner, Catherine, will Zoom in and ask the questions via a laptop or iPad or teleprompter or something like that. And that's really opened up the possibility of including more voices without the budget. And it's also helpful for us, as we both have young kids, so we're not having to travel all the time. So that's the biggest difference, I would say, in our process, that it just has like opened up a door for more possibilities for filming.
So do the Zoom interviews, and you're still using them in the final product?
Yeah, that's at the beginning we did like, it was just like the Zoom recording. But now we'll hire a local crew.
Sure.
Yeah, and we Zoom in,
But during the pandemic, like, were you able to still intercut that and didn't really like compromise the quality too much?
Yeah, awesome. I mean, it sort of had its own
feel.
I will say, though, that we actually do still use Zoom interviews for, you know, like not foundational interviews for a story, but as like voices coming in.
Yeah.
And what we've learned that we really like about those is that they're much more, I mean, it's like you and me, it's a much more candid conversation. There's less of the like performative, there's a camera in my face, people are used to it, so they have a different feel, and sometimes it's more intimate than a formal interview, which we didn't expect. But so we do actually still use them for that.
Interesting. That's good to know. And then with the kind of satellite crew, when you're here local, what's more typical? Do you like, are you on a laptop, like on a Zoom conducting it? Or you had also mentioned like using a teleprompter. Like if you're doing it now and you have a shoot in San Diego and you're staying here.
Yeah.
I just want to learn a little bit more. This is kind of a selfish question about, like, are you the DPs there? They're local. Any lighting people, audio people, and are you there on a laptop screen? You had also mentioned a teleprompter. Like, what's the typical approach there?
It kind of depends on two things. One, the DP's preference, and two, the style of the story. So for several of the ones that we did in mid-pandemic, we were doing like centered looking at the camera interviews. And so for those, it was helpful to have, I mean, some DPs will like connect the camera to the Zoom, and and so what I'm seeing through my Zoom screen is through their camera lens, which was fun. And so for those, it was helpful. I think they would have like an iPhone or iPad like right above the lens. But if like I just did one the other week where I was just on a laptop where I would have been sitting if I were there in person, and it just looked just like
It's
side
awesome.
interview. So and it wasn't connected to anything, and that was the preference of the DP. He was like, I just want to do lo-fi, just like laptop, and it works
Yeah,
great.
that's awesome. Good to know. Okay, folks, those couple of questions were for me. So you and your partner, co-founder Catherine, is her name, right? The ethos of the company is very clear, right? I mean, you're front and center with it. Talk to me a little bit about that. Like, what is your mission in terms of like how you want to use video storytelling and documentary filmmaking? What are you trying to achieve in this world?
Yeah, I mean, I would say it's sort of evolved based on the kinds of clients that we've gotten. So we've done a lot of, we do a lot of like climate change stuff, a lot of health stuff, like health science, which is not my background at all. I came more from the story side, but that's something that I really have learned from clients is like they have a particular thing that they want to communicate about a particular topic, or they want to educate people about something. And so what we love to do is come and like learn what that is, and then find a way to pair that with story. And what I think is so magical about story is that it engages like the right side of your brain, and then the stuff that you're learning is left side of your brain. And when those two come together, it like makes all these connections. You learn things better. It's really memorable. And so we love to do both. I think stories on their own are incredible, but I think I love stories and information together. And so the way that we do that, the two main ways that we would do that, I would say, are like we try to find a specific anecdote or a specific story that like grounds whatever topic you're talking about in a personal story or a specific story. The other way that we do that is like maybe we're talking about a topic, or we're learning about something, like having the arc of the topic be a journey or a story, so that you're learning like the history of something. So like for instance, we did a story about migraine attacks, and one way to do that is like we can get a person's specific story about their migraine, but also it's interesting to find out like what is the history of migraine attacks. There's this whole gendered history of how women were thought to be neurotic and couldn't handle daily life, and it's actually and so like the evolution of how we understand migraine is like steeped in this sort of patriarchal culture. And anyway, so just like what is the like the larger story, and then what are the specific stories? Those are the two things that we love to do.
Clearly, it's an indication of witchcraft. I think that's what
Exactly.
migraines are. Like,
Yeah, that's
must be tooling with the dark arts or something.
Yes.
You have this, I don't know if this is the line verbatim, but it is the general feel or goal, it seems, of using stories to spark social change. That may be exactly what you say, but I know that's the gist of it. What types of stories in your experience motivate people to take change? We all know that's an incredibly hard thing to do, right? To inspire people to actually like take an action. Move them emotionally, not as hard, right? But to make them actually like stand up and go, or even to click a link, right? It's very hard to do. Is there a type of story or a theme or a certain emotion maybe tied to it that you've noticed that like this generally works in terms of like getting someone, like moving them to take an action?
Yeah. I think getting people to see themselves in stories is really important. So, like I said, like the anecdotes, like if you're just sort of giving like a general overview of like an experience or something, you get a sense of what it is, but you don't get like the sense of what it was like to sit in that moment and experience that thing, So I
Right.
think for me, like when I get really moved by a story, and where this really sticks in my mind is where like someone tells a story and I'm like, oh my God, that's like my relationship with my parents, or that's like how I feel when, or how I felt when I was a teenager, or like those specific moments that people communicate, like that to me is what really gets people emotionally invested and want to learn more.
I think that's a good point. And it's like if we just gave the history of migraines, like the first migraine was diagnosed in 1938, it was like I'm gone. And even if I don't experience migraines, if I have felt what the subject, has felt, whether it's like, people thought I was crazy, right? Because, I had migraines. I might be able to relate to that, or somebody could. And then now I'm a little more invested probably in learning about migraines and how else they might have shaped things in the world around us that I'm unaware of. But yeah, just a history lesson or just points can be tough to digest.
Yeah, and I think one other thing, kind of a separate point that we feel really passionate about is like if you're telling the story about somebody's experience, particularly if it's someone, who's experienced depression or has been discriminated against or is in sort of a disinvested community, that just telling that person's story is not enough for people to understand. Like, it's sort of like, I don't know, there's like a power difference, right? So it maybe elicits empathy, but not anything beyond that, right? So one thing that we really feel like we strive to do is talk about whatever the systemic things are that are contributing to that person being in that situation or that community. So it's not just sort of like, there's also, I think, a lot of times people think, oh, well, it's their fault, or they contributed to their situation in some way. So we like to kind of, whenever we have a personal story, if there is a systemic oppression or things that have contributed to that situation, like really having that be in there so people can understand the context that they're in and not just see their story for what it is and just be like, oh, too bad for them. But it's like, no, they're in this situation because of, systematic racism and, or, things that are contributing to the context of that.
I think that's such a great point, and I totally know what you mean. And if the story is told the right way, it helps people connect the dots, right? Because it's a narrative, right? It's not just a loose collection of dots, meaning information. You're really tying together how they all are tied together. Yeah, that's a really good point, and I think you're 100% right that it can be easy for people to be like, "Oh, that's a shame they're going through that," and not realize that, like, hey, something you might have done yesterday could contribute a little bit to the overall system that therefore contributes to that situation. That is really powerful, actually. Great answer. I'm gonna think about that for a while. What advice do you have for people nowadays, right? Like, I told you, I think this is before we started recording, like a lot of the people that I work with, I view as, what did I say? Under-resourced and overwhelmed, right? So there are a lot of people who are content creators. Most brands are content creators of some sort these days, or they want to be, or know that they probably should be leveraging that. So, like to a small to medium business owner, or a nonprofit, or a solopreneur, personal brand type that wanted to incorporate or leverage video storytelling in their strategies more effectively, but not necessarily hire StoryMine or someone like you all. Where do they start? Like, what would your suggestions be? I know that's a big question. We won't be able to cover it all, right? But there's also, I know there's a lot of kind of limiting beliefs for people, like, oh, I won't be able to do it well. I don't know what I'm doing with a camera or anything like that. Like, if someone was set on it, how can people be better storytellers on video is the direct question. Or with video, I guess, is a better way to say it.
I guess one thing that I would start with is making a plan and thinking about, one of the things that we try to do sometimes with clients is like think about what are all the things that are happening this year, and not think like and like maybe you've got an event happening in March, and then you've got another, thing happening in July, and then another thing happening in September, and think about, okay, what kind of video would we want to show, and who's going to be at that event, or do we want to film that event and then, do a video about that event later? Like sort of have a plan for like chunk it up so it's not just like, I don't know, we could do anything, it's just like think about like help yourself narrow it down to specific things. And you could even start with one and say, okay, we're going to there's we're gonna do a video for this event, and these people are going to be there. These are the people that we really want to reach at that event. Okay, now and then strategize about like what kind of story would reach those people, and then just do it kind of in chunks. And the other thing I would say that we try to do is like often people don't see the all the things that are happening throughout the year as B-roll opportunities. And so let's say you think, oh, we're going to do an end of year video. That means you need to have your iPhone out or film at all these things, collect videos and pictures from, people that are, that are working for you or volunteers or whatever. It's like collect all that stuff, ask people to take pictures, and then create your own archive of stuff. And that can be gold to someone like us who's coming in to do a video. It can be gold for you. It can be used for all sorts of things, but just like actively collecting your archive of footage, like is just really, really helpful in any kind of storytelling.
I swear, if like that's the only tip that that resonates with people, I hope that they hear that. It's so good and so needed and so neglected and overlooked. Like just getting in the habit, and it is a habit that you have to establish of just documenting, not
Totally.
necessarily tied to the goal. I also love that you said like we could use something like that. So even if it's not like I'm going to make these videos, documenting is still crucial to help fill in the gaps of the story. So I think that's such a great little gem just there in that 1 minute of how people can up their game. And then as they go on, they might see how these pieces can connect themselves. They can put it on social media, but just documenting it is so crucial as things go on. And I think people, they totally overlook that. I can think of plenty of examples and events from my own life, whether in a working capacity or personal, where like something happened. I'm like, did you get any pictures or video? I'm like, oh no, I didn't, didn't have my phone out. And it's like, look, in your personal life, I understand that we don't always want to be latched onto this thing, but if it's your business, that's a golden opportunity that is so easily overlooked.
Yes. And the cool thing about that is like, I mean, and we really do think about it as like archival footage. So, and you never know when it's going to be useful. So one example is we did a story for a big company in Durham, and they're huge now, but they were started by a family. And so when we did the story design session, and we were like, okay, we want every photo that you've taken, like, and when it was like your family, like it's just the four of you, and we want all that stuff. And they had these amazing videos that they had created when they had just started their business, that they made like a Christmas video to send to all their family members of like, this is our office building, and let me give you a tour of the office. And that's how and so we ended up doing a brand video for them, and that's how we started it. It was with their like just for the family video that was like fun and goofy, but it was like the perfect thing to for their story.
Yeah, I really love that we landed here. That's so crucial, and especially in the early days. That is for anyone that's starting a business, like document everything that you can, because like that's the golden stuff, where especially when it's like a struggle, right? When it's hard, and like look at how far we've come. You don't know when you'll be able to use this. I have we're kind of pre-launch, but I've started to publicize it now. I'm a co-founder at a new startup here locally that's doing like family stories, like your parents and your grandparents' stories, and turning them into films, into documentaries. And some of these that I'd done in the past that were kind of the impetus behind this. Sometimes you're lucky and people like they had a reel-to-reel camera back in the day, or like
Totally.
a Sony, and they're filming, and when you have that as the filmmaker or the storyteller, it's golden. You
Yep.
know, I mean, not everybody does, so we have to be able to do our job with or without it, but it like when you have it, I'm like, oh my gosh, not only are we seeing your kids in 1975, it's just perfect. So I think that's such a great tip for brands, is like just document everything. You never know how you're going to use it. What is let's go back to your brand and your business. I know that you told me like during the pandemic, and you knew this was kind of coming, you're kind of experienced a little bit of growth in terms of like, all right, we can't go out and be shooting everything. Are there any, like, what's coming down the pipeline? Are there any new big plans or new big projects you're excited about? I know, I still feel like we're kind of in early 2023, but we're not. It's like May now,
I
so
know.
it's halfway through. But so we can look into 2023 and 2024, but is there anything that you're like really stoked about coming down the pipeline?
Yeah, I mean, so last year and this year, we've been doing a big collaboration with the New England Journal of Medicine. And so they have some funding from YouTube to do to be sort of a trusted source
Gotcha.
of video content. And they hadn't done it before. And so last year was sort of a trial period of like, what's it going to be like? You know, New England Journal, who's been around for 200 years, but haven't really done any video content. They do some like animated explainer videos, but this is sort of a new thing for them. So we are working with them all year round
Awesome.
on a variety of projects. So it's like perfect for us because it's like complicated. We have to learn a ton. I know like a ton about random diseases that like people are like, "Are you a doctor?" I'm like, "No, actually, I'm just a storyteller, but I like to like to really get into it." So that's mostly what we're doing this year. We have some other projects with previous clients that we're doing, but that's our main focus right now.
That's really exciting. What's been any challenges with that? Or I'm sure there's been several, but with that group of people or that organization or this approach, this new approach?
Yeah, I mean, I think the biggest challenge is they're huge topics. Like, right now I'm doing like type 2 diabetes, which is just like massive. So it's the biggest problem is narrowing it down. And we always think we're going to do a 6-minute video and it ends up being 16 minutes. You know, I mean, there's just like, even after we cut. So that's the biggest one, I think, is just like figuring out, okay, we can't tell absolutely everything about this. What does our audience need to know about it, and what can we teach them, and also like paired with the stories, and like what can we teach them about the patient experience, and so bringing that in. So yeah, that's the biggest challenge, I would say.
One of my favorite things about this type of work is, I get to be fully immersed in a different, culture or industry or whatever for each project. And what made me think of this is, I have a specific client in the healthcare industry in a rare cancer specifically. It's a rare cancer foundation. So, and I've been working with them for over a decade. And so, like, the things that I know about this very rare cancer is more, and this may sound pretentious or boastful, but like, is more than your general, like, PCP, because they may have heard the word in med school, but never revisited it, right? And I've been immersed in it. So, that's really cool for me. And other cultures that I get to dive in and learn so much, and you come out like at least a quasi-expert or at least knowledgeable. Do you have a similar feeling? Like, is that something that kind of drives you in this? It's like, yeah, I get these like deep dives. Again, we're back at that same expression into these certain specific worlds.
Yeah. And that's what I absolutely love about it, because I feel like I, well, and a lot of them, with healthcare, not necessarily with rare diseases, but a lot of them, touch everybody really. And
Totally.
it's sort of like a specific, there's that same like specific and broad thing too. Even if it is a rare disease, the way the healthcare system works, and I'm sure I could imagine that the people who have that disease, their experience is so similar to other people with other rare diseases, where it's like it's a full-time job to navigate the healthcare system and to explain your experience and get people to understand it. And so there's the universal and the specific within each one of those, which I just find endlessly fascinating.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, look, I appreciate you coming on so much. I'm excited to see, first of all, that's an awesome project that you have, but I'm also excited to dive a little bit deeper into, look, here we are again, we keep saying that, into the work that you and Catherine have done. It's, again, I'm kind of surprised that we haven't met already, but it's been mm-hmm. a real pleasure talking to you, and I'm excited to see the work that you do.
Yeah, well, thank you so much. It's been an honor and a pleasure.
Absolutely. Appreciate you.
All right, take care.
My name is Rain Bennett. Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed that episode, do us a favor and subscribe to the podcast. If you're already a subscriber and you're enjoying the show, give us a review and let us know the value that you've gotten from it. We love to hear from our listeners and learn about the benefits that they're getting from the show. That's what fuels us, and that's what fuels the show. And if you've already subscribed and you've already reviewed it and you think there's someone else that would benefit from listening to this show, please, please share it with them. The more we grow, the more we can help you grow, and that's what we're here to do. Join us next time on the Storytelling Lab. This podcast is a 6-Second Stories production. 6-Second Stories is a story coaching and consulting company that builds online education, in-person and virtual training, and digital products that help businesses master storytelling to find their ideal customers and market to them effectively. You can learn more.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
At 6secondstories.com and purchase the book 6-Second Stories at Amazon, barnesandnoble.com, or rainbennett.com/6secondstories.